I think it's true on multiple levels, that in beginning Siman Sariva, we are entering the home stretch at the end of Hilchos Bas Ruchalav. Not only in the simple sense that Baruch Hashem, we've learned a lot, we've worked on very, very difficult Limudim together, and now sort of the final two shorter and perhaps lighter Simanim. Certainly Siman Sariva will be a little bit lighter. Sariva will have its own complexity, but he will find it overall the easier lima than Sadi Dal, Sadi Hey. But not only the home stretch in that sense, they have two short simanim, and then we'll be ready to chazer hook to Bas V'chav, Mr. Shem. But also home stretch in the sense that we traversed the mountain, and then we land at the other end, and now this is the final straight path, by which I mean, when we started Siman Tzadi Aleph, so I mentioned that from Tzadi Aleph to Tzadi Hey, sort of you could visualize it as a up and down a mountain or up and down a hill. Because Tzadi Aleph into Tzadi Hey is sort of building in terms of different degrees of sharing of flavor. Tzadi Aleph has begun by just cold contact, it's just a question of cleaning the surface, and then the balance of Tzadi Aleph had moved into various types of partial blios. Either you have maliach perseach, where there's some degree, limited degree of transfer of flavor. You also had the chamot of tzonein, where the stationary piece of food is cold and something hot is falling onto it. And there too, the sugya of psachim, you see there's a limited degree of blia, and then building up to tzadi beis, where it's a fully hot situation. At that point, it's a potential for Bliya Bakula. That was sort of working up the mountain, and then on the far end, Tzadi Beis, then Tzadi Gimel, Tzadi Dal, Tzadi Hey, was moving down the mountain in terms of how much distance there is between the Basar and the Chalav. From Tzadi Beis, whereas the Basar and the Chalav are in direct contact, Chalav, Tipas Chalav falling to Basar, vice versa, the Tzadi Gimel already begin to look at Kalim, whereas they have 1 degree of separation. So it's already the chalav is encountering not the actual basar, but no sintam of the basar. The siman tzadi dalid, now that we've worked through it, so you see that was different applications of those principles, but specifically the principles of kalim towards the end of tzadi dalid, began to see what comes more fully in tzadi hey, which is yet another step removed. Right? The chalav is not even encountering a kli that's a direct nos and tam of the basar, but rather the chalav is encountering the dag mashal of the kaira, the nap or not of the basar. So that's sort of the up one side of the mountain and then down the other side, up, working our way up from Sayat Sai Beis in terms of the degree of intensity, and then working our way down from Sadi Beis to Sadi Hey in terms of the remoteness, the distance, number of steps between the basar and the chalav. And now we come to, now that we've completed that mountain, now we come to Sadi Vav and Sadi Zayin. Tzadi Vav in particular, it's interesting that these, just thinking for a moment before we dive into the details, is sort of like it's a good opportunity to sort of look at the bigger picture. And the structure from Tzadi Aleph to Tzadi Hey is understandable. But what came before, what came after? And the truth is, you know, Davar Charif they're about to enter into could have appeared in Siman Tzadi Aleph. The other types of quasi blios, but it's here in part because as you began to see learning the Harusa, it's the same Gemara. It follows immediately on the heels of the Gemara Sadi Hey. Sadi Hey was the Dag Mashal of Bekaira, the last third of Kifyon Aleph and Beis, and the Gemara closes it up with the Hilchos of Dag Mashal of Bekaira and the needed contrast, which we'll get to inside in a moment, lean at her, to the Tzidon Shechasach of Zaken. So the Gemara Mamash is running Sadi Vav. So it's not surprising that the Torah Shechasach arranges that way also. And Bechal is worth appreciating that what is where, outside of the pyramid, is the best word, the pyramid or the hill, the mountain of Tzadi Aleph and Tzadi Hey, so what came before and what came after has a lot to do with where it is in Shas. Siman Pei Zayin was introduction to Yisodos of Bas V'chalav that really appears primarily at the end of the parak, but we understand why that's the introductory siman. After that came Pei Ches and Pei Tes and Tzadi. We skipped Kechal, but Peches and Peites we did a while ago, I spent time on. The various Din and Drabanan, which appear at the near the beginning of Perek HaBasar. On the far, and the latter part where that we're entering into now is Tzadi Vav, which is later in the Perek. Right here we are in Kufid Beis, and then Tzadi Zayin, of a milchik bread, which is largely based on Gemara's outside of Chulin entirely. So the as is the case in many areas of Tur, the organization is a blend of a topical, logical organization and an organizational seder amasechtas. As a matter of fact, the truth is, if we would zoom out for a moment, the first half of Yeridea is Hilchas Kashrus, arranged, at least generally speaking, by seder amasechtas. And if you think that all of the Yeridea is usually published in three volumes, the entire first volume and the beginning of the second volume are all kashrus. So basically the first half of Yeridei is kashrus. Yeridei Chel Galef, Shchita, Trefus, Minim Ksherim, Melicha, and so forth, and then Bas B'chal, we are now in Tarobas, is more or less the range of Seder in Sechus Chul. Shchita, the first two prakim, and Trefus is the third parak, and Minim Ksherim, the end of the third parak, and Melicha. Shulchan does present Bas B'chal before Tarobas, even though they sort of come in the reverse order, some of Tarobas in the seventh parak. Basically, Yardei Chelkav is all the Diyim Kashrus appear in Chulin, and more or less, Al Seder Maseches Chulin. And then, the Diyim that appear the first part of Chelik Beis are all the non-Chulin Diyim Kashrus. So you have all the Mahalei Akram that appear in Vodah Zarah, and the various other Diyim appear in Vodah Zarah, but Nemanus, and more by Nos Tam Lufgam, which is really officially in Vodah Zarah Sugya, and then gate into after that, after Kufi Beis to Kufchav Beis, which is all the dinim of the small dinim of Avodah Zarah. Then you have the big chunk of Avodah Zarah, which is the halachas of Yayin, which is a major, many simanim based on a big chunk of them at the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah. And then from there, the tour moves on, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch, to other non-kashrus dinim in Masechet Avodah Zarah. All the halachas of Avodah Zarah are there as well. So it's really, you zoom out, you see that organization by Seder HaGemara, and we see even within Bas B'chav as well. So with that, now let's...
You couldn't say that about the Rambam, though, right?
The Rambam, much less so. The Rambam was very... Then the truth is, historically speaking, the Tur is working off of a very strong historical tradition. Right. Even the Sfaradim, the Gaonim also, the Rambam was a major break with what came before him.
Right.
The Rambam, in a certain sense, is in a line of a Masoris coming through the Rift, going back to the Onim, who were already building different abridgments of the Gemara. You have Halachas Gedolos and Halachas Ketuos, and a number of other Kitzurei Halacha, some on certain parts of Shas, and some that were really meant to be comprehensive. And then you have the Rift, in a certain sense, is a crowning climax of that tradition, that genre of the Gaonim. And then the Rambam is also, but at the same time, a number of major changes. The three primary chidushim of the Rambam, structurally, number one, his corpus is much broader, as unlike the Gaonim and the Rif, and most Rishonim who follow the Rambam. The Rambam is drawing not only from Bavli, but he's very open about the fact that he's drawn from Bavli and Yerushalmi and Tosefta and Midrashei Halacha. And as the Gra points out in several places in the Bira Gra, that not only in terms of drawing things that don't appear in the Bavli, but even with Machlokas, the Gra says more than once, Darko Shala Rambam lifts up Yerushalmi Negra Bavli Bukam Bukam. So the Rambam has a much broader corpus. The Rambam had a much broader scope of topics. He's almost the only one to even include Dina Vadar Not Nogi Halach L'Maisa, Bizman Hazat. The Rif is limited that way, and the vast majority of Onim also are limited that way. Bahag has a little bit of Kachim here and there, but very, very limited. I've never seen the Sefer Beinu Matzliach with one of the Gaonim. I don't know if it's extant, but the Rabbeinu Bechaye in the Hagdama to Torah Chovas Alvavas, so he gives you sort of like an overview of all the Sfarim that have been written since Chasimus HaTalmud. And that's how he ultimately gets to all the different sorts of Sfarim, but no one's right but Chovas Alvavas. And then he says, well, I'm rhetorically, maybe there is no Chovas Alvavas, maybe Halacha Judaism is only concerned with the deed, and he demonstrates that's not the case. He says, I'm not right for this, but no one else has done it. So Makom Sheinish, I guess I'm going to have to write a sefer of Chavos Halavos, and proceeds to give us one of the great masterpieces of Klal Yisrael. In giving that sketch of what is out there, so he does mention, there are the many svarim written on Chomos Ha'ivarim, and this type, that type, he mentions Rabbeinu Matzliach even wrote on, even those dinim that are not Nogeyev as well as that. I've never seen it. I don't know if we have it or not. But it certainly was a rarity. So that's Chiddush Tu of the Rambam, is to cover even dinim that are not Nogeyev as well as that, and also to cover Inyanei Hashkafa and Emuna also, and Midos. So he has a very broad scope in terms of topics. And then the third one, which brings us back here, is that he sought to very, very aggressively reorganize. And he's very explicit about that. He says that the Talmud is conversational. And he says that's the genre. Talmud is meant to be conversation. And it's conversation, gets different things. He says, but I'm trying to write something, the Lashon HaMishnah, and as a Mishnaic Hebrew, not Talmudic Aramaic, and also in the style of Mishnais. Hebrew as opposed to Perush. He's trying to write dinim, a code, not a conversation. So he says he's going to reorganize things aggressively, and he does. There are still, here and there, you'll find that the Ram does sometimes maintain things based on where they are on Shas. Klalim, when he deals with Klali Halacha, Osik Mitzvah Patana Mitzvah, those sorts of things that don't have any natural, specific, topical home, so I think those he does tend to quote in the context in which it shows up. Maybe because one place is as good as any other, unless he would have, he didn't choose to make an area for Klalim, in part because he was building the sefer around the Targum Mitzvahs. So it's all topical. So there's no appendix. There's no general section. So everything has to have a home. You have to attach it to some mitzvah or another. So maybe that's why the Klalim, he puts them historically where they appear in Shas. Other than that, the Rambam is pretty aggressive. About reorganizing. That's the Briskerov, the opening piece in Briskerov's Sefer on Rambam. He already points out that that's a tool in learning Rambam, is that the position, location in Rambam is much more significant than any other Rishon, because he puts it in the place where he thinks it belongs. It tells you a lot about what it is. Okay. So let's take a look here. So now let's dive into the sugya. With that introduction, and that tour of Rambam and the first half of Torah Yerideya, and more specifically Bas B'Chalav. Now we're done with the pyramid, the central pyramid, and now we're looking at the dinim that appear in Sadi Vav at the end of the parak, and then in Sadi Zayin we'll get the dinim that are off Masechta.
Bas B'Chalav and Taruvis, the ordering for that, that's in the order of the Gemara?
So the Bas B'Chalav Taruvis is an interesting question.
Because I know it, when people learn it, they learn it in different directions.
Yeah, some people learn Bas B'Chalav first, some people learn Taruvis first. There definitely are parts of Taruvis. The Chulin part of Taruvis comes before Bas B'Chalav. The primary address of Taruvis in Chulin is Paragin Anasha, the previous parak. On the other hand, it could be even from a Gemara standpoint, much of Taruvis is elsewhere. There's almost all Bas B'Chalav is in Kalbasa. Here and there, you have Zechama Tochtona and you have Tzim and Sai Zayin with the Milchad Reb. Almost everything Kalbasa. Whereas Taruvis already, you have in Chulin, you have a lot in Psachim, and you have in Beitza, and you have here and there, and it's all over the place. Maybe that's why. It also has something to do, part of the organization of the beginning of Yerideya is also rooted, really the tour is rooted in the Rashba's Taras Habayis. To a certain extent, I'm not sure how much that changes things. I mean, the Rashba was making these cheshbonos also. But I believe much in the Rashba, so it's not exactly the same. The two organized things a little more tightly.
Yes.
Because some of the dinim, as we're seeing, let's say Simen Sarivav and Simen Sarihei are really rooted in Shar Dalid of the Rashba's Taras Habayis. If you were taking a look, that's what I put in the Marble Comes. It happens to be very, very rich. While official, which is already the Taruva section, the official Bas B'Chalav section is backed in by Sar Shlishi. So the tour seems like he was trying to sort things out some more. But the Raj already has officially, you know, Bas B'chal first and then Taruva second. Gotta take a look in the, I don't think we should do it now. You can take a look, the Rajba or explains his, unlike the Torah, the Rajba explains his order. He has a table of contents where he, I believe, where he explains why he put things where he put them at the very beginning. So gotta take a look. You can take a look later and see why he explains what's where. Okay. Because Bais HaShlishi, which at the near the end includes Bas B'chal, is about Hechsher Ochlin, making sure your food is kosher. Bais Revi is about Taruvas. So he put Bas B'chal is in Hechsher Ochlin in Shar Gimel, together with checking the simanim of your of your animals to make sure they're kosher, and taking out the Giradasha and taking out the Chalev. So it's a different type of organization. Maybe, not sure. Okay. Sorry? What did you say, Mike? Okay. Maybe you lost him. Okay.
Are you possibly muted?
No, I think. Should be unmuted. Everyone looks unmuted. Okay. So let's jump in. So as advertised, the Davar Charev actually does expand beyond Purim, but definitely begins with, here we are, the bottom of Kufi Aleph on Bey, the top of Kufi Bey's on Aleph. So you have the whole, at the end of the whole sugya of Davar Shaul B'Kairu, the Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, what the status of Naparnat is. We had seen there's a further Machlokas, Rishonim, Rivan and other Rishonim, but it began with Rav says Naparnat is Milchik or Fleshik, as the case may be. Shmuel says it's Parat, and so Machlokas, Rivan and other Rishonim, you know, is Shmuel told all Naparnat, only some Naparnat, all of them is Bashal. Okay. So when it comes to the conclusion at the bottom, the very bottom of Kufi Alpha and Bezam, and Chizm Shema Baye, Hilchus, so we pass in Dagosh on the Kairam Mutul Achim Mutlach. You should know that we pass in like Shmuel. That the Dagosh of the Kaira, Naparnat, however broadly or narrowly you define it, the Chlobus are shown him, but whatever qualifies as a true Naparnat is Tak Parv, not Milchit. And then he adds, Sinon Shechasacho Besakein Shechatach Babasar also Achlo Bokuda. Sounds like we're making a contrast. Now, while the fish that were in the Milchit, that were in the Fleshik plague, they're talking parah, but on the other hand, you have your radish that was sliced with a knife that had previously been used to cut meat. That taka is aser. That taka is aser to have a milk. That is fleshik. Now the Gemara says, but yet we have to limit Abaye's statement a little bit. It's true that if you cut a radish with the knife you had cut with which you had cut meat, that the radish is a fleshik. It's more than an aparnat. Honey needs to know the Agav Chorfei Bola. This is not just any vegetable, this is a sharp vegetable. And it's the charifus, it's the sharpness of the radish that's driving the blio. The kishos, if you have the squash or some mild and soft vegetable, garul de paskev achal. You just have to, or gar, may have the girsa garid. Your gorid, you just scrape away where the cut was, and everything else is fine. I want to go on to give some more examples, perhaps. The kilche de lifta, if you have shari, the silka, asiri. Salak is a sharper vegetable. The lapis is not sharp, so the kilche de lifta are mutter, and the salak is a problem. The final thing where it says, the pasach puhu de lifta, sharper dummy. If you went back and forth between the lefes and the salek, so that's going to neutralize the lefes, kind of lefes, the sweetness of the lefes will neutralize the flavor. You're not going to have a problem when you cut this up. That's what the Gemara says. So what do we know? The first thing that jumps out right, the most obvious point the Gemara is obviously making, that we need to figure out, is why the distinction. In this case, the whole thing is not run out. They say pasul like Shmuel, Naparnat is power, but by the Tzinnon, it is a problem. And it's a problem because what? Because of the Harifas. The Harifas causes Bliya. Why does the Harifas cause Bliya in a way that the heat doesn't cause Bliya? So what's going on? What's going on? So that right away, he said so the number one, you have to figure this out. And that's something that Rashi already addresses, and other Rishonim are going to sort of line up. Rashi gives two approaches to that, and other Rishonim are going to line up on different sides, whether you hold like Rashi's first approach or Rashi's second approach. That's going to be a major issue, answering that question. And that's going to sort of unpack it to what's the lumdus, what's the mechanism? What's the lumdus of what's going on here with the stone shachatach of the sock? Why is it becoming fleshik? And that's one question. And the other major question that emerges right away is thinking back to Simon Sari Aleph, Rishon going to start to raise is how much of the tznon became milchik, or fleshik rather. How much of the tznon became fleshik? Right? Because the contrast is to the kishos. Mm-hmm. If you use the fleshik knife to cut the squash, so then just scrape away the surface, as opposed to here where there is a bleer. How much bleer? The whole thing, part of it, didn't really explain. And it's also interesting, a third point that emerges from the Gemara, in addition to why is tznon more chamor than napranat, A, and B, how much of the tznon became fleshik, how deep was this bleer? The third point, which is interesting, is kilche delifta shari. It seems as though there... How many different possible psakim appear in this Gemara? One was Aser, or Fleshik. Another one was Garid. And so the third one was Shari.
That can't be, right?
That's funny. So how you understand that? What's going on?
Because there's some mushes meat on the knife. So something.
I understand. Are there three levels here? Like Kishas is like a little bit Kharif? Well, what does this mean? Kisha a little bit karf, and then the lefes is not karf at all? Often, that's what it sounds like. But the tzanon is the worst, mamash have a bliya, and then
the kishas
have to at least scrape a little bit of something, and then the lefes is mutter.
Right, so you indicated before that the sweetness of the lefes is doing something. So
maybe. So we have to figure out. Again, so those are the three points just emerge from just reading the Gemara carefully. Is A the most obvious point? Why is this worse than a napranat? Why is this more chamer than dagum shal b'kaira? Number two, bala. How much is bala? And number three, what's with this shari? Bala, garid, and shari. Those are three options. Okay, so those are the first three points that then emerge. There is a Gemara or two in Avodah Zarah as well, but for now, let's see what's going on here. We'll just leave in the back of our minds for now. It's always good to know, you have to come across a concept, how early does it appear? Like, is this a Medina de Gemara, Medina de Mishnah? So it is worth noting that while there doesn't seem to be any, here in Chulin, the discussion begins with the member of Abaye. There is a sugya of Davar Charef in the second paragraph of Avodah Zarah, and that's on Daf Lamed Hes, but that's working off of a line in the Mishnah on Lamed Hes, Avodah Zarah, the Mishnah that has all the machalim asurim of Goy, all the issues of kashrus with non-Jewish food. So one of them actually has to do with the Gemara and Lama Tess understands that one line of Mishnah Lama Hey, one of those many dinim, one of those many cases, is based on Charef. So there is already a source in Mishnah for Charef. So let's try to figure this out. Okay, so what does Rashi say? Rashi says, Kishus. Masuki Kishus is sweet, also sweet. So Rashi later by Lifta says Lepas Eino Charef Ela Maso. He also says Masukehi. That sounds like sweet may be the opposite of Charef. Masukehi is sweet or pleasant. The Eino Nivla Besocha Ela Hashamnunis Saf VeOmed Amakam HaChetach. Rashi says by the tzenon, it's because of the sharpness of the tzenon, there's the actual blia into there's actual absorption of flavor. Here, there's nothing being absorbed. It's just ben. Shamnuz is tafa omen bakamachetech. There's just grease on the surface at the on the surface of the cut of the squash. Hilkach garer or garer lepe paske, just scrape the spot where it was nifsak, where it was cut. Garer lepe paske l'makam chetech, he explains. Garer lepe paske mean l'makam chetech gorer ma'at besakin, the achim. Take a knife and scrape away a little bit on the cut spot, and then you're fine. Then you can even eat it with nachas. Okay. Now, so now that he translated, now he's going to think about the dinam. Let's think about the hilkach. So therefore, what emerges from the gemara? Dag mishal v'kaira, says Rashi, the third line. Dag mishal v'kaira mutachem v'kutach kedamar. So the fish that was in that had been hot in the flesh of plate, you can eat it with milk. It's wise, powerful, wise. Kedamar de einos and tambam and amamish elanos and tambam and osentam. That's a napar not. This dam kaira v'kanchenos and mishuman akarish shaleh, because a plate is, we assume that your default plate is clean. There is no grease from the previous use on your plate. So when you took the plate, the albeit fleshic plate, there was a clean fleshic plate upon which you placed the hot fish. Mishamias, that would be gross. Sometimes you have non-hygienic kitchens. We assume your stam balabasta keeps, whoever's running the kitchen, male or female, they're not really differentiating here. Whoever's running the kitchen, you assume the plates are clean. So then the flesh, so there was no flesh grease on the surface of the plate that was directly nibbled into the fish. It was just the flesh that had been there previously, it got absorbed into the wall of the plate. And now that tam nivlat comes as niflat into the fish. So that's a napranat. And Shmuel says, napranat is mutter. Napranat is parav. But Rashi says, but the sakin, aval sakin, pa'av shashamnuz kar shalav. Sometimes it's going to have a layer of a film of grease on it. Eino nicker, and it's not noticeable. As a matter of fact, Rekive Eger, again to Shulchan Aruch, Rekive Eger actually says, he gives a fascinating, we usually think about Rekive Eger as being very abstract, conceptual. He gives a practical test, how to test to make sure that your knife is clean. He says you should run water. Plus he says if you run a stream of water, I don't know whether you're getting a stream of water, I guess pouring from a pitcher, run a stream of water, and you want to be able to see that the water is flowing down from one end of the blade to the other, from tip to tip, without any zigzag. Yeah, it should be totally smooth. Mm-hmm. That's how you're going to tell whether there's any bits of grease remaining.
Can't you just run your finger over it?
Maybe you could, although bear in mind that the knives are often not as smooth as ours. So they know what they said. Why do you think they're saying that? Because that's why I should put that. You know, nicker. On their knives, particularly, even more than our knives, air nicker, there may be a thin film of grease that's not easily recognizable. You have to look carefully to notice it. So you looked at a once over the knife, it looked clean. Kushachotech b'tznon, avinosin talbam and amamesh. You cut the tznon, so then there's a blia of flavor from actual flesh of grease. Now, that's pirush number one in Rashi. The Rishonim say, two pirushim. The Rajma says, there are two, he's very explicit. In terms of it. There are two Pirushim in Rashi, other Rishonim also. If you read Rashi, you might not, at first, you might not realize it. It's sort of, Va'od. Yeah, the Va'od is, Rishonim say, it's a totally new approach. Let's just appreciate for a moment what he said. So what was he saying? He said, you know why we don't chalk up that's known to be in power because it's not Barnat? What's the first answer? Because it's not Barnat. Tam Bab and Amamish. This is the same as a cooking vegetables. If you have beef and broccoli, even if you take a piece of broccoli from the beef and broccoli and you wash it off and cut off a stem, you can easily wash it. It doesn't help. It was bolea directly from the buster. That's a tam rishon. It's the same thing.
Yeah, or said differently, if you had the plate with the fish, with the hot fish on it, and that plate actually had flesh of grease.
Right.
That's not banat. That's
correct. Right. So he said the same thing here.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting, though, just to bear in mind, is so where's the blia?
Right. Where's the heat?
There's no heat.
Right.
Right. So now, as I mentioned before, you notice the word boa in the Gemara. The Gemara, not many words in this whole Gemara, but Belia is one of them explicitly. So the Gemara did say, and the Gemara even explained why. I got horfei boa. The Belia is happening because of the Harifa. So and that Masha Eno came as Rashi opened the Kishas, which is not Harif. There is no Belia, and the Kishas, which is not Harif, so you just have a gook on the surface. But if it's harif, so then the harifus takes the place of the heat. The harifus will cause an absorption. But, Rashi says, of the onus is something to absorb. If it's just that there's a fleshik of flavor in the knife, so even if you were telling me that the harifas will even if you tell me the harifas could like pull out some of the flavor from the knife into the tzidam, but that's not barnat. That's no stronger than heating the tznon with the fleshik knife. But if it's mamash is there, just like as you said, you put the hot fish on a dirty plate or the hot fish on a dirty knife. So that's the tamishin of fleshik. So too, instead of heat, you have the charifas. The charifas is causing bli in place of the heat, and it's tamah bamin amash. So that's Rashi's first perish. So the explanation for why it's not an aparnat is because it's not an aparnat, because it's actually tamah bamin amash. But then Rashi says there's another pshat. What's the other pshat? Mishum churfe balat fe midagim haroschem. Mishum churfe balat fe midagim haroschem. It's not just that agav churfe bala parallel that charifas takes the place of heat. The second pshat in Rashi is the charifas is actually more than heat. In other words, charif not only is a way of creating bliya betzonein, and that's something that we have seen in the past also. Maliach kerosech also type of bliya betzonein, and kavush kemavushal, a 24-hour soaking liquid also. Bliya betzonein, that's a big topic, speaking of where we got started. Avodah Zarah, the clay yayin, that's a big, big topic in terms of, I'm not going to get into sherry casks now, but that's the question of, part of the question at least, of Kavash Kemavushal. Okay, so far, the first Rashi, I would say, okay, there's a third type of bliya betzonein, which is harf. There's Malich Karasech, and there's Kavash Kemavushal, and Agav Chokur Rebal. But now the second Rashi is saying, harf does something else also. Harf overcomes or compensates for the weakness of Naparnat, a Tam Kalash, that doesn't count. Ah, but there's Harifas, not only does it cause Bliya, it also ramps it up.
Resurrects.
Yes, it resurrects. That's an interesting term, especially in, yes, given the season. Agav Duchka de Sakina Palit Sakina Obalatone. Rashi has to explain now, there are two elements. It's like in terms of what drives the bliya, it's a compound. It's a combination of duchka de sakina and davar charf. Duchka de sakina, some of the rays saw when we learned Sadi Dalid, we had seen the Gemara back in the first parak that came up at the very end of Simon Sadi Dalid. The Gemara had said that duchka de sakina, if you deal with pressure, so that could sometimes that could be a player, the force, the physical force of pressure of a knife, and post can say also, let's say, pressure of a fork. You're stabbing a pickle or something like that. So that come up on Dav Chesem and Beis in the first parak, and the question about shechting with a tray, shechting an animal with a tray for a knife, shochet b'sak m'shalav ovi kochavim, shochet b'sak, as the Rashi refers to it in the non-censored version, shochet b'sak and shal nachrim, or b'sak and shal dayim, if a non-Jewish knife, treifa knife, they used to shech, so you remember that had been the sugya on the top of Chesem and Beis. There have been different explanations for why the machlokas, Rav and Rav Arachana, whether there's a bleak de klipa or nothing at all, we're just clean the surface, they go on different explanations why is there bleak de klipa. Is it bleak de klipa because it's hot? Because Beis Hashchit Roseach, and either everyone agrees to that, and Rav Rachana somehow explains, but I'm not worried about the Bliya. And Rav says, no, it's hot, so Bliya would take Lipa, or that's the machlok is Rav Rachana, or the Gemara said at the end, or maybe Rav agrees that it's Sonein, but still he says, but the Ducha de Sakina, that's what's driving the Kidei Klipa of Bliya. So that we had seen that the Shulchan Aruch discussed the end of Simon Sayadal. So that's a Rashi. Here the sugi, that's what Rashi is helping us with. He doesn't tell you look in Dav Ches, but the language of Duchot de Sakina is drawn from Dav Ches, and Rashi is saying, and you have to realize, you have to read Dav Kuf Yudeis, you know, with an awareness of Dav Ches. In other words, the Davar Charif is not alone causing the Bliya. It's a Davar Charif plus a Duchot de Sakina that causes the Bliya. In other words, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. If I stick a spoon into horseradish, I've ground horseradish. Not the jarred horseradish, not much like what the Bubba's doing in Erev Pesach. You know, with the ribeyes and fresh, fresh, sharp, the davar charf. Davar charf. Might not be mar, but it's definitely charf. So you stick a spoon into that, that doesn't cause blias. If you leave the spoon there long enough, maybe there'll be the equivalent of maliach or kavash. But just to spoon out some mustard, it doesn't cause blias. I spoon out some mustard with a fleshik spoon, the mustard's for sure parv. Why? Because Rashi says the havla'ah, the force to move the flavor, the equivalent of heat or maliach or kavash, is not just charif, but a combination of charif and duchid sakina. So if I'm cutting a davar charif with a knife, or I'm spearing a davar charif with a fork, so the combination of davar charif and duchid sakina is our fourth method of bli, our fourth force, our fourth possible force for time transfer. Instead of heat, instead of salt, instead of soaking, davar charif plus duchka de sakina. Why is Rashi all of a sudden now mentioning the blend of the two? So it could just be that he's after dealing with the first question, which is what happens now, by now he now deals, sort of gives you more perush of what's going on. It could also be that it's a contrast. As in the second perush, in the first perush, davar charif did one thing. Right? What davar charif accomplished was it was the havla'ah. And that's it. In the second perush, davar charif accomplishes two things. It's the havla'ah, it's the force to cause the bliya, and it's also that which overcomes naparna. So those two functions are both carried out by davar charif, but they're a little bit different, because havla'ah only works in tandem with davar charif plus duchat zakina. But the other piece about naparna, that actually, davar charif alone does it. What do I mean? Oh, there's no bliya. Let's say I have a hat. If I saute onions, I slice onions with a power of a knife on a power of a plate. I have things gevaldik. The onions are power of, and then I throw them in to saute in a fleshik, a clean fleshik pan. It's naparna. Naparna. Okay. So Rama would say we're machmer. No. There, that's not just a chumra like the Rivan. That's mamish. Mikra did, that's fleshik. Because davar charif. Even though there's no duchat sakina, it's fine. The force to cause havlah is the heat. I don't need duchat sakina. But the davar charif, the charifus alone, without duchat sakina, charifus alone is going to ramp it up from a naparna to the equivalent of a tamisham. So that's why sauteing the onions. By the time you're done sauteing, the onions are now charif. But when you got started, the onions were still charif. Okay.
I'm confused.
Is that basar in terms of waiting also? Like it's mamish tam basar that you'll have to wait?
Well, we'll have to get to, that's a good question. We'll have to get the details. Waiting may be a little bit different, or maybe not. We'll have to see. Because you still don't have any mamashas of basar. That's one thing you definitely are missing. So at some point you have to think about what the standards for waiting are. Yeah, Johnny?
I was thinking that the first and second Pshat in Rashi was, the first he was focusing on when there's actual be'en there, and that's why, if there's already be'en there, then you could rely on just, you know, the charifas to transfer the be'en.
Oh, interesting.
I suppose the second one, where he's focusing there on blios I thought that's what he was trying
Maybe.
To get at.
But that would be a remarkable chiddush. Because what you're saying is that if I take a davar charif and I touch it to food, I touch it to a piece of meat. Oh, right, that's what I'm saying. So without duchat sakina, you're not going to tell me that near.
But my point is that in your case you just gave, if there's no be'en, if there's no mamashis of meat in that frying pan, I wouldn't have, the way I was reading the Rashi, I wouldn't have thought that.
You're right. That's exactly the difference between the two Lashonos. Correct. So let's recap. The difference between the two Lashonos, that's the way the Rashba makes it crystal clear, the difference between the two Lashonos is they both agree that Davar Charif is a method of time transfer, Bitzonein. Presumably they both Lashonos agree that it's Davar Charif combined with Duchat Sakina, the method of time transfer. The difference is, do they think that Davar Charif, the second lashon adds the davar charif also overcomes the napa na. The first lashon says, no. The only time this is an issue is because there's mamashos. The second, in other words, if you cut onions with a clean fleishik knife, are the onions fleishik or parash? So that's the machlok, is two lashonos in Rashi. First lashon Rashi says, not parash, it's parash. It's a clean knife. The Gemara that said it's fleishik, that was talking about a dirty knife. Maybe we even assume that the stam knife is dirty. Okay, but if we know that the knife is clean, it's then fine. And the second lashon says, it doesn't help, the knife is as clean as you want it to be. Steel wool in the works, I don't care. There's still a bliya, and the davar harf is going to ramp up the not bar not into not. Right? So that's exactly the machlokas here. As we're going to see, later Rishonim are going to argue over which lashon rashi is possible.
The frying pan case, how do the blios get out?
Heat.
Right, so if you take a snow...
But there's already heat.
So the onions in the frying pan. Yeah. So you have heat.
That makes sense.
But the problem is that all the heat in the world, it's sending over a blia that doesn't matter.
Right.
But with the davar harf, now it matters.
Right, you take a snow and then you put it on a plate, like a plate, without cutting, or just putting on there. It's not taking the lapinat out without tochel de sakina.
Right. There has to be a method of tom transfer. Right. If there is a method of tom transfer, so then according to the second lashon in Rashi, then if the davar harf involved, it'll elevate the not bar not flavor to not rishon. Where did that come from, by the way? This idea that Rashi is putting out that davar harf isn't just as good as heat; it's actually better than heat. Seems a little ironic. It seems strange at first. Where did that come from? So you could say, well, Rashi's trying to deal with the Gemara. And Abaye said, it's no shachatoch b'zakin. The Gemara does say it's more chomer than not bar not. That's a clear point that Abaye is making, that contrast. So, okay, so you say one way to say it is because there is knives. It's a difference between knives versus ka'aros, or it's a difference between snow versus nagim. Right? That's clearly the two options Rashi has. Either knives tend to be dirtier, or it's snow is hard. Part of the background for that, just like we saw, but the background for the Duchud Zakina is the Sugya Davches in the first Pagan Chulin. The background for the concept in the second Lashon of Rashi, the Davar Harf not only could stand in place of heat, but somehow could do things that are uniquely powerful. So where does that come from? The notion that Davar Harf can make it even worse than anything else, that comes from the Sugya of Odazar. That again, Rashi doesn't mention it, but presumably that's what he has in the back of his mind. Here we come to the Mishnah of Odazara. Mishnah of Odazara. This is the second in a series of three Mishnayos towards the end of the second parak of Odazara. The 32nd thumbnail sketch of the layout of Masechet Avodah Zarah, the five prakim of Avodah Zarah. The first two prakim about halachas have to do with interactions with non-Jews. The third parak and beginning of the fourth parak have to do with Devarim Shel Avodah Zarah, not just Nachum by Avodah Zarah. You have to suspect that this item that you have was part of Avodah Zarah, or was an Asur Bahana. And then the last parak and a half, the end of the fourth parak into the fifth parak, are largely about the halachas of Yayin. So we're going back to specifically interaction with non-Jews, but specifically about Yayin. That's such a big topic. That's the last parak. After that, the very, very end of the last parak, you have Tzvios Kalim and one, two other dealing with that sort. So here, towards the end of the second parak, again, the first two parak are about interactions with various types of interactions with non-Jews. So you have a series of three Mishnayos. They talk about items that you might buy from a non-Jew, and what's their status. So the first Mishnah, first of the three Mishnahs, is you get the following list of items from a non-Jew, you have to assume that's Asur Bahana. The second, that's the Mishnah on Chavtes Nubeh. El Dvarim Shal Ovdik Ochavim, Asurin, Isurin Isra Hana. Following items, Asur Bahana. And you have the second Mishnah, Laman Hey, is things you get from a non-Jew, they're Asur, but any Isurin Isra Hana. They're not kosher. Asur Bahil Matabana. And the third list is on the Lamatas of the days, things which you get from a non-Jew which are kosher. So that middle list, the first list in Chavtas, those are things which are Avodah Zarah, really, there's a concern that was used for Avodah Zarah, Asur Bahana. The second list on Lamatas of the days, which is where we're going to look, so these are things that are not, it's treif, but not a concern of Avodah Zarah. That's why it's Motzei Bahana. So this is where you have We were talking before about the beginning of Yodei Chelet Beis. Chalav Akum is here, and Pas Akum is here, and Bishal Akum is here. They all come from this Mishnah. Laman Hamadis. The different items are non-kosher for different reasons. And then near the end of the Mishnah, you have one line about the Koret Shel Chiltis. A Koret, a small cut piece of the Chiltis. Chiltis, I looked into this. Chiltis, I think, is assumed to be Asaf. I don't know how you pronounce it. Asafoetida. It's a plant that grows in Iran and Afghanistan. Apparently, it's common in Indian cooking. I use a very small amount, and it makes all the other flavors pop. Sorry. It was understandably something they were buying from the non-Jews. It didn't grow in Eretz Yisrael. So they were getting it from non-Jewish salesmen who were probably traveling the Silk Road, or the Fertile Crescent. Anyways, if you get it from a non-Jew, the Koret Shel Chiltis, it's treif. So why is it treif? So the mission of Lavan Hamad Beis, the Gemara is Lavan Tesla and Aleph. By the time you get to the end of the list, the Gemara says in the white line, Koret Shel Chiltis, my timer. What's treif? It's the vegetable. And it's a raw vegetable. So the answer is, Mishum de mafsikile besakino. Because they cut it with a knife. You're not getting a whole piece. They're not selling you a whole Chiltis plant. They're selling you a Koret Shel Chiltis, little diced Chiltis. Apparently this stuff is very, very powerful. So you're buying small chopped minced pieces. You'll tell me, what's the problem? The Nachri cut it with his knife. But the knife was probably Eina Ben Yomo. So whatever Tom got is, I'm not, a Jew has an Isser, Maisa. I'm not allowed to use a Kli Eina Ben Yomo because that's an Isser Drabana, an Isser Establishment. So that's the end of it. But I didn't use it. I buy it from the, it's not even like I have the option to get my own Chiltis. That's what they're selling. They're selling Koret Shel Chiltis. So they cut it with their Eina Ben Yomo knives. So what's the problem? So that's kosher. The Gemara says, no. It's true that all time of Gam is Mutta, that's how I passed him. But I've got Khurfe Dichel Tisa, Machilele Shamnunisa, Vahabele Knosim Tam Veshvach. The Osir says the Davar Kharif is an exception to Eina Ben Yomo. Normally, Eina Ben Yomo doesn't make treif. The exception is Davar Kharif. So that's the Beferish Gemara, Imam Tessim Alpha Vodazara. Based on, and that's how the Gemara interprets. That's the only interpretation the Gemara has. For the mission, that line in the Mishnah on Hei Beis, so the idea of Davar Kharif already appears in the Mishnah, Koret Shel Chiltis, and that's fascinating. So what the Gemara is saying is, we already came across the idea that the Gemara says Beferish and in Chulin Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, that Kharif is a way of creating Bliya Agav Chorfei Bala. And Rashi we saw in his second Pirush suggests maybe Kharif does a second thing, which is to ramp up a not by not to Tom, the equivalent Tom Rishon. I'm saying where is that we get the idea from that Kharif actually makes it stronger. So it's a parallel, not the same, but a parallel type of idea. The way the Rishonim, this is a very long sentence here in Lama Test, the Rishonim abbreviate to Machli Alei L'Shvach. Davar Kharif makes it flavorful. As a Nosnam of Gam, the flavor, the bleeds right in Ben Yomo, so it's Pagum. The Kharif solves that and makes it Meshubach again.
It's talking about the Shamnunis, though.
Yes, and the question is what type of Shamnunis? We're talking about Shamnunis, which is Koresh al Gaba, we're talking about the Shamnunis that's Nivla Besocha. The truth is, as now you're really starting to think about the interactions here, not only is Lamites Amun Aleph sort of a conceptual model, you see that Davar Kharif could do even more than other cases of Li in terms of elevating Eina Ben Yomo to Kuvim to Ben Yomo, so as a sort of conceptually similar model, maybe also can elevate. Then as Rashi's using that Gemara, I wouldn't have automatically guessed necessarily, but if I have this Gemara, I'm trying to figure out what's the Gemara saying that this is, that the Sinon is worse than the dog. I say, oh, okay, so it elevates it not by not, not. It's certainly, it's a conceptual model for Rashi's second Pirush, and more than that, somebody should point out, L'chore, it's a Raya, because if the Mama Shamnunis Be'en, so how do we tell Eina Ben Yomo? What Eina Ben Yomo? B'yom Eina Ben Yomo is when it's clean. If there's Be'en, what do you mean? If food sits out for 24 hours, it's Pagum? That's a big chiddush. Now, if the Mishmeres HaBayis says that. Mishmeres Habayis is on the side of the Taras Habayis. The Taras Habayis in the middle, that's from the Rashba. The Rashba's peer and often antagonist is Bar Plukta was the Ra'ah. They are both two of the most significant Talmidim of the Ramban, the Rashba and the Ra'ah. So they clash often in Halacha. Sometimes they agree, often they disagree. And they each critiqued each other's Sifra Halacha. Is that true? Which I'm not sure. I don't know if the Rashba ever, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of the Ramban and the... I think of the Rive of Balamar, I'm sorry. But the Ra'ah, I'm not sure the Rashba ever critiqued the Ra'ah. Well, we'll see in a moment. But definitely the Ra'ah wrote a critique of the Rashba, Taras Habayis, and the Ra'ah wrote a Bedek Habayis. All the cracks, pointed all the cracks in the Rashba's house. And then, on the, so usually the way it's printed like this, you have the Rashba, Taras Habayis in the Gemara position, the Bedek, Ra'ah's Bedek Habayis in the Rashba position, and the outside you have the Mishmeres Habayis, who's defending the house. The Ra'ah is pointing at the Bedek Habayis, the cracks in the house. Mishmeres Habayis is answering all the kashas of the Ra'ah. There's some debate about whether the Mishmeres Habayis was written by the Rashba or not. He doesn't write the B'Shem Atzma. He just, it's written anonymously as, so some assume that the Mishmeres Habayis was written by the Rashba, and some assume that it was not. One of the Ra'ahs, I believe, is a Sugya. I know that, in general, one of the Ra'ahs is that sometimes the Mishmeres Habayis doesn't seem to agree with the Taras Habayis either. He just explain why the Ra'ah is wrong. That appears to be the case in the Sugya. Because of this very issue, the Mishmeres Habayis makes the point, he has a whopper of an attack on the Bedek Habayis. He says that Bedek Habayis is wrong, and his language is bad, his diction is terrible, and his svaras are bad, and his dinim are bad, and his rayas are bad. Yeah, the Mishmeres Habayis goes to town against the Bedek Habayis, and one of his many, many, many kashas is how could the Ra'ah say, essentially accept Rashi's first pirush, that the only reason why it's known Shechtach B'Sakin is Fleishik is because of the Shamun Sal Gaba. So the Mishmeres Habayis says, I don't understand, what's going on with the Hiltus? Says, if you think that the chilt is also, the Gemara says, it's cut with a knife. Right? Mafsiki b'sakin, then finish the Gemara and vote is up. So what type of a knife? A clean knife or a dirty knife? So he says, if you think there's grease on the knife, then lo have a kari lehasim nosim tam lefgam. Kol shul be'anin o kari pogum, b'sheni b'in yom, u'kedas rabbo senu. He says, that's our tradition or our bein, is that if you, again, at a certain point, food becomes spoiled. Okay, nisrach is nisrach, but just because you have a bit of food that stay out of the refrigerator for 24 hours doesn't automatically become kosher and parv. So he says, forget about conceptual model for the idea. He says it's a raya for the din, the raya for the content. Not only do you see it elevates anybody know, but it must be that the knife is clean. Otherwise, why even talk about anybody know? Yeah, so it is an interesting raya. And again, it's also, the Mishmeres Habayis also appears to not be the Rashba, because the Rashba himself goes back and forth on the issue of which Pirush to Paschal like, and the Rashba ultimately sides with the first Pirush of Rashba. So he says it in the large Taras Habayis. The Rashba also wrote a Taras Habayis HaKatzar, a brief version without all the Shach V'Tayr, just Piskei Dinim. And he says there also, clearly, that the concern is of is boleyat known harful boleyim and a shamnunis shenikrash al asakin. The Rashba in both Taras Habayis Ha'aruch and Taras Habayis Ha'katzar is clear they hold like the first Pirush in Rashi. And but the Mishmeres Habayis assumes like the
second
pshat in Rashi. Yeah, there's more back and forth also. So maybe we'll pick up. We're laying the groundwork for the sugya. There's more to talk about. Maybe next time we'll pick up with the Rashba. The Rashba's back and forth about whether to hold like the first pirush or the second pirush. The Rashba, the Ra'ah, there's a tosis. There's a lot going on here. So we've begun to lay out the sugya. The sugya very much. It's ultimately one big sugya with a lot of parts, as we're seeing, right, a lot of different issues to think about. So let's just recap where we've been, and we'll continue it next time. Let's recap it in a slightly different order. What we see so far is that there are various chumras of Davar Harf. And Davar Harf does different interesting things that you would not have expected. So far we've seen up to three. But that wasn't clear. We've seen as many possibly as three chumras of Harf. And the first chumra of Harf is that the Gemara is befeirish in the top of Kirfi Beis Malach that Harf is a type of Bliya B'tzonin. That's why the Sham... That's why you cut the kishus with a knife. It's just a question of cleaning the surface, but you cut the snow with a knife. Now that snow was boleya. Number two is for the second difference for sure. L'chora is a gemara of Avodah Zarah based on the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah that's machle l'shvach. That charf is an exception to the din that ain ben yom v'zos tam of gab. And that the over there it's that the charif chil the chiltus which was charif is becoming treif from the treif and knife, despite the fact that's in Benyamo, and presumably here that would be the same with the fleshik knife as well. And then the third point, which is a matter of dispute between the two lishonos and Rashi, as we're beginning to see, machlokas later Risham Halpaskin, is you also say that davar charif elevates a nap or not. That was the question, whether the knife in this case is dirty or clean. Is it tambam and amamish, or is it it's just a tambalua in the sakin? We had opened by noticing three points in our Gemara. And so far we've dealt with two, or at least begun to deal with two. No, so far we've dealt with one. Right? The one point we're already even just looking at before you even turn to Kufi Beis Malach, the Baal Kufi Beis Malach, Abai is saying up a clear contrast between Snon Shechasacha Basakin versus Dagon Shal B'Kairos. That Rashi addressed, again, two approaches, either because the knife is dirty as opposed to the Kairos, which is clean, or because the Harifas of the Snon elevates Nap or not, while the Dagon, which are Mesukim, are not. The other two diukim in the Gemara, which we'll have to deal with,
you said how much of the snow?
Right. We said there's a plia. The question is how deep is that plia? That's a very important point, halacha. And then the third point we also have to address is why is the lift mutter? We said the tsunon is aser, and the kishus requires greda. And then the lift is mutter, so that's the third option. It's actually that point, but the lift being mutter, that's what the Rashba uses to try to figure out. He sees that as a fulcrum to think about the two Pirushim of Rashi. Mishnah will pick up Blinetta next week. They're looking at the two Pirushim of Rashi, which is going to get us started lahalacha. And then we'll really be able to see what's going on in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan is going to unpack a lot of this. As Michael was pointing out before, aside from dealing with these core issues of does it not by not, and how much bliya is there, and how does it work with any ben yomo? That's also, even though it seems like the famous Shikamar, we're going to see there is some debate in Rishonim, but any ben yomo, very fascinating by Armin Rutenberg. There are other issues also I want to think about that aren't as expressly dealt with in the Gemara. One is what's called a davar charef, what foods qualify as a davar charef. Another issue is what Michael had mentioned before, how fleshig is fleshig. So this is going to make me have to wait 6 hours to get home. So these are other issues which I'm coming away.